You coming home or staying here a while? Sam left with Alice, and the two of them walked up Ingram together. The moon was pale and pinkish, and the March air, depending on the exact moment, was both warm and cool. At 11 that same night, the phone rang at the Forest House and Sally answered.
Sam knows you're with someone, Alice said. He came to your house tonight and looked in your window. He saw you in bed with someone.
How much does he know? Sally said.
Just that you were with someone.
He doesn't know who.
Sally was quiet for a bit.
Does this mean we have to stop?
No, Alice said. We just need to be more careful.
Chapter 15. Alice turned to Mikey.
You think I can eat an entire croissant in one bite?
Before he could answer, she had snatched another one off the coffee table and methodically balled it up between her palms until it was the size of an apricot. She shoved it into her mouth, cheeks puffing wide as she chewed. Down the hatch. She slapped her hands together victoriously. Crumbs flew. Mikey said,
"Wonders never cease."
Alice nodded out toward the wall of windows and said,
"Have you heard the one about the lawyer from Toronto?"
"A joke, you mean?"
"Not exactly. True story. Fancy Pants' rich lawyer works on, like, the 30th floor of a firm in Toronto. He's got a room full of colleagues, decides to run into the floor-to-ceiling glass on the other side of the room to prove that it's unbreakable. Apparently he'd done it a bunch of times before, but this time..."
Alice paused to sip her wine, and she slapped her hand violently through the air.
"He busted through. Kaput. In his defense, the glass didn't actually break. The whole window just popped out. But I'm just saying, please do not try this at home. Or at Jimmy's home."
"He died?"
"Dead, dead, dead. Sorry to be grim," Alice said. "But while we're on the topic, my dad got cancer in his colon."
"How bad?"
Alice sucked air in through one side of her mouth.
"Bad. Probably got a year or two at most. Just found out last month."
"How are you doing? How are they doing?"
"I'm thinking of moving back down here to help out."
"Really?"
Alice nodded.
"I could sell the marina up there. Already got someone who's interested. Move down and open one up around here. I was looking at some property online, up near the harbor in Lewiston. There's a rinky-dink old boathouse I could turn around."
"I'd love to see more of you, Alice," Mikey said, and he felt a hope spike through him. "I'd love it if you moved back here."
Alice said, "I'm sure you'd get your fill of me after a week or two. Then we'd have a big fight and hit each other in the face and never talk again."
Mikey laughed.
"Don't say anything. I haven't talked it over with Chris yet."
Alice finished her wine in a single swallow. Mikey said, "Have you heard from the Saint recently?" Alice and her husband had gotten together when she was a junior in college. He was the TA in her marine biology class. They'd been divorced now for 8 years. More recently, Alice liked to report to the others when the Saint had sent her a Christmas card that included a braggy letter. Alice had never provided details on their breakup. She would mock the Saint until she was blue in the face, but the actual explanation of their divorce was the one thing Mikey had ever known Alice to be reluctant to speak on. Alice nodded.
"Just the usual Christmas card." "Speaking of the Saint, there was a guy in a bar the other day who reminded me a little bit of him. You know what this guy in the bar said to me? The weirdest insult I've ever received."
"What did he say?"
"He cuts right in front of me at the bar, before the bartenders got my order, and I call him on it, tell him to learn some manners. You know what this guy says? He spins around and goes, 'Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? I bet you think you're pretty freaking tall, don't you?'"
"How tall was he?"
"Your height, probably. What are you, 5'10"?
Mikey nodded. Alice said, I was so taken aback. I didn't have anything to say. Not a word. Imagine that. Anyway, I'm still hungry. I think I require something with sugar in it next. She rose to go to the kitchen and returned a few minutes later with another bottle of wine, a jar of fig jam, a jar of strawberry preserves, mustard, and a knife. She spread these items on the coffee table before them. Then she sat back down and leaned forward to touch the stained rim of her glass to Mikey's. She sighed heavily after sipping from her wine and licking a purple drip that slowly made its way down the outside of her glass. Mikey, I'm going to tell you something before the others get here.
Okay.
I never wanted to betray Sally's trust. And I was afraid that the rest of you would blame me if you knew, so I didn't say anything. But it was because of me.
What was?
Sally leaving our group.
Alice reached down to touch Finn's head again, running a single index finger knuckle between his eyes, and he blinked slowly and groaned happily.
Don't hate me.
What?
Mikey stared at her.
Alice sat back in the couch and fiddled with a loose thread in her sock before releasing another heavy sigh and finally stating plainly, Sally and I were involved.
Mikey felt his eyes double in size.
Involved with each other?
Alice nodded.
It started when we were 14 or 15. It started, like, experimental, purely physical.
Mikey couldn't help the awkward laugh that escaped him. He apologized immediately.
Sorry, I don't mean to make light, I just...
We were so young. I had no idea.
I know, Alice said. We kept it totally secret. Sam almost found out once, and it tore him up. He didn't know it was with me, but just knowing that Sally was involved with someone... Sam was in love with her, too.
Really?
Mikey said.
Alice nodded. That's another reason I haven't wanted to say anything. He nearly caught us. I lied to cover it up.
Mikey said, Did something in particular happen between you, leading up to the time when she cut herself off from all of us? A fight? Alice clicked her tongue against the roof of her mouth.
That's what's always been weird, she said. Nothing out of the ordinary. I was falling in love with her, but I couldn't tell if she had real feelings for me. It was hot and cold. We never had a proper conversation about the status of our relationship, and I wasn't going to force that. I was too scared, too proud.
So things ended between the two of you when they ended with all the rest of us? Alice nodded.
I had no more warning than any of the rest of you.
Mikey said again, I had no idea.
Alice pulled the rubber band from the end of her braid, redid the bottom few inches of braid, tightening it, twisted the rubber band back on, and tossed the braid over her shoulder.
Mikey said, So you think she cut herself off from all of us because she felt awkward about ending things with you?
I think so, yes, Alice said. Maybe she felt shame, didn't want to be gay, realized she wasn't gay, but, well, not to get into it too much, but when things started, she was very much the initiator.
Really? Mikey said.
Alice nodded. At that point, I didn't know what I was, gay or straight or something in between. Sally and I were walking home together late one night. She invited me into her place. Her mother wasn't home, said she had something to show me, and, well, it was my first kiss, first everything.
Mikey said, Did she seem experienced?
Alice said, I don't know if it was experience, but she definitely wasn't timid.
Sure.
Mikey stretched out his neck, wildly uncomfortable with this information. He brushed absently at the colorless hair on his forearms.
From right when it started, Alice said, I just sort of had the sense, I was afraid she was going to go through me.
You mean use you, then go on to someone new?
Alice considered this.
Use me isn't quite right. Too simple. Crude. I actually mean, I had this sense that she was going to pass through me, like a ghost, then go on to somewhere unknown. Poof. Leave me shaking.
Across the room, the fire spat.
And I guess I wasn't wrong, Alice said.
She was quiet for a bit, then she said, Sally was beautiful, wasn't she? Something magnetic about her. Hard to explain.
Anyway, at least that's how I remember her.
Alice paused and cocked her head vaguely sideways, looking at Mikey.
Were you in love with Sally, too? You knew her before the rest of us.
Mikey said, Sally was my first friend.
These words brought an unexpected swell of emotion, and Mikey had to swallow several times to disperse the warm, hard lump that rose in his throat.
Then he said, I don't recall ever feeling anything romantic toward her, though. I don't think I did.
Alice said, I think we were all sort of in love with each other at different times.
Isn't that just what happens when friends grow up together?
Mikey said, I don't know about that.
Alice said, Oh, come on, Mikey. Are you saying you were never in love with me?
This made Mikey laugh.
No, he said, sorry.
Who were you in love with?
I don't think I was, Mikey said.
Was what?
Capable of it.
Alice sipped her wine.
Well, aren't you the heartbreaker?
The boy who couldn't love.
Alice laughed. Mikey laughed too, but the beating in his chest suddenly felt like sobs. They sat in silence for a few moments. Mikey's nose was running, so he went to the bathroom, blew his nose into a square of toilet paper, and looked at himself in the mirror. When he returned to the main room, Alice had grown impatient and was hollering for him.
Hey, get back in here and continue bonding with me!
Already the sky was growing dark over the lake, which appeared to be frozen over as far as Mikey could see. The snow that had accumulated over the frozen lake had a slightly different look than the snow on land. A blue-gray hue, striations and vein-like patterns, as if it belonged on a different but similar planet.
Been strange, hasn't it? Alice remarked. Seeing where all of us ended up? How all of us changed?
Mikey nodded. It has been strange. Interesting. Although, I don't know that I believe people ever change, he added.
To Mikey, things just sort of happened to you, rolled over you like a tumbleweed, then went bouncing along.
Really?
This seemed to surprise Alice.
You don't think so?
Well, I guess you've worked the same job, lived in the same house for the past 10 years, and I don't mean any offense by that, but...
Jimmy? Going from a shy math nerd to this wealthy L.A. hotshot? And Sam? Big old tough guy that he was when we were young? Everything, fuck this, screw that. Now he's this churchy guy, God bless, at the end of all his emails? Well, and Sally, of course. She went from so close to us to whatever she was at the end. You don't think that's a person changing?
Mikey thought on this for a bit. He was briefly tempted to press Alice on the topic of her divorce. What or who had changed there? But he decided against it.
He said, I think at various times in life, we're either more or less true to who we really are. But that essence, that who we are, I don't know that that ever changes.
So who are you?
Once again, the word hollow made its way to the surface of Mikey's thoughts. But before he had a chance to respond to Alice, she said,
Quite frankly, I disagree with the whole premise. I think it's a pile of crap.
How's that?
I think that deciding you have some unchangeable essence is just an excuse.
For what?
For not changing, dummy.
Fine. Wonderful, Mikey said. He was tired of Alice's opinions and eager now for the others to arrive.
Don't get testy. I can agree with you on one point, that there is a fundamental difference between us, you and me.
Just one.
Alice said, "You're serious unless you're instructed not to be. I'm not serious unless I'm told that I have to be. Try not to be offended."
Or you could try to not be offensive, either way.
Oh, come on.
Alice reached over to shake at his shoulder.
Do you need to go try to move your bowels or something before the others get here? Work yourself into a better mood?
Mikey said, I will give you $1 for every minute you can manage to not speak, starting now until somebody else gets here. He pointed at his watch.
Alice completely ignored this and said, Have you ever read that book?
Oh, wait, now what's it called?
How to Make and Keep Friends?
Something like that.
Do you mean How to Win Friends and Influence People?
That's the one. Anyway, you should probably get yourself a copy.
Alice got up and did a sun salutation in the middle of the room.
Chapter 16.
Sally's science teacher started talking about the upcoming solar eclipse in October of Sally's third grade year, a full month before it was actually set to happen. Sally mentioned it to Mikey on the bus one morning.
What is it? Mikey said.
It's a time when the moon goes in front of the sun, Sally explained. It only happened like a few times ever in the history of the world. Your teacher hasn't said anything about it yet?
Mikey shook his head.
I'm sure she will, Sally said. We're all learning about it, because it's going to happen while we're at school. We're all going to see it together.
What will it look like? Mikey said.
A big, beautiful, shining thing, I imagine, Sally said.
Okay, Mikey said. It was quiet for a little bit.
It might be the most beautiful thing we'll ever see in our whole lives, Sally added.
In the row behind them, Alice was figuring out how to turn on the supersonic boombox cassette player she had finally managed to steal from her older brother. Sally looked back over her shoulder just as Alice pressed play. The introduction to The Emotions' Best of My Love blared out from the dimpled silver speakers, jazzy descending bass beat, horns accenting the percussion. Alice shared a seat with Lynn, and in the seat across from them, Sam and Jimmy looked up from their football playmaking notebook when Alice's music came on. Jimmy snapped along with the music while Sam did a funny, seductive little dance in his seat, something he'd learned from MTV, no doubt. Chubby little hips grooving, lips pushed out. Alice turned the music up louder when the vocals kicked in.
Doesn't take much to make me happy and make me smile with glee.
Lynn nodded along with the music, lips murmuring the lyrics in synchrony with the recording.
Never, never will I feel discouraged, 'cause our love's no mystery.
Jimmy and Sam joined hands and bumped roughly against each other in their seat.
I like the way you make me feel about you, baby. Want the whole wide world to see.
Alice got up out of her seat when the chorus came on. She turned the volume even louder, heaved the boombox up above her head, and strutted back the aisle of the bus as though it were a runway. She sang very loudly and slightly off key.
Whoa, whoa, you got the best of my love. Whoa, whoa, you've got the best of my love.
Other students on the bus were taking notice. They watched Alice, pointed, giggled. From the front of the bus, the driver glared into his broad mirror and hollered, Clancy! Alice ignored him. She continued to dance and sing up and down the aisle, stumbling but recovering quickly when the bus took a turn. She wore a men's white V-neck t-shirt that was way too big for her, and pants that were way too short. Beat-up Reebok sneakers, a plain black baseball cap backward over a long, thick, dark ponytail that swung back and forth like rope as she danced. Other students began to sing along. Alice turned the music up all the way, to full volume,
Whoa, oh, 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 you've got the best of my love. Oh, 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 you've got the best of my love.
The bus driver bellowed, Clancy, sit your ass down.
Alice wouldn't stop. Up and down the aisle she went, singing and dancing, the boombox high above her head.
Whoa, oh, 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 you've got the best of my love. Whoa, oh, 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 you've got the best of my love.
Other students had gotten out of their seats to dance along, the chorus reaching a fever pitch. 30 voices, shrieking joy, madness, Alice leading the charge.
Sally leaned over and whispered to Mikey,
she's something else.
When Alice drew close to Sally and Mikey's seat, she leaned down and said, what are you waiting for? Get up and dance. Her breath smelled of strawberry gum. Her face was sweating. Her dark eyes dangerous. Mikey said,
I don't know how.
His father never, ever played music in their home. Alice said, just watch me and do what I tell you. Chapter 17. Once Lynn, Issa, and Sam had arrived at the lake house, they all took a seat at the dining room table, with one empty chair remaining for Jimmy, who had yet to provide an update on his arrival time. The room was warmly lit by a rustic cascade chandelier made from real deer antlers and faux white candles. A shelving unit on the modern wood-paneled wall held a large framed photograph of Jimmy's family from his childhood, a Bible, several potted cacti, a ship in a bottle, and a tiny snow globe featuring the Buffalo skyline. The caterers produced several large dishes and carried each platter around the table to serve everyone individually. French green beans sautéed with lemon and garlic and white pepper. Pomegranate salad with mint and feta and orange zest. Rolls with butter and honey. Roast lamb with rosemary and arugula pesto. Sam buttered a roll, bit into it, and said, what is it with rich people and unsalted butter? Wine was served to Mikey, Alice, and Chris, but Lynn, Issa, and Sam all said they'd stick with water. Alice said, Sam, are you teetotaling these days too? She turned briefly to Lynn and Issa. No offense. Sam smoothed wispy blonde hair back over his brow, a gesture that would have been glamorous had his hairline been intact, and took a sip of his water. Sort of. Mikey had also been surprised moments earlier when Sam declined a drink, but his desire for peace between Sam and Alice surpassed his curiosity. He sensed now that Sam didn't particularly want to answer the question, and quickly interjected, I'd be teetotaling too if I knew what was best for me. Alice ignored this and turned back to Sam. Empty calories? Trying to lose a few? Sam didn't respond. Mikey muttered, for crying out loud, Alice. Alice glared at Mikey and tossed her thick black braid over her shoulder. Oh, excuse me, are you offended by my poor manners? Obviously, I could stand to lose a few myself, and you could stand to get down from your high horse. She turned to address the rest of the table, as though they should all join in conspiracy against Mikey. Can I not ask a man if he doesn't drink, why he doesn't drink? We're all friends here. She dipped her chin toward Chris to her left. Well, except you. Issa lifted his finger and said, and me. Lynn said, I obviously don't mind talking about why I don't drink. I say it to a room of 30 people every week. But some people don't like talking about it. Maybe Sam's just not in the mood to talk. Or maybe there's nothing to talk about. Lynn flipped her wrist casually. Her shoulders were small nubs under her oversized black shirt. Or maybe he doesn't like Pinot Noir. Maybe he prefers Shiraz. Mikey said, or maybe he doesn't like being interrogated 2 seconds after sitting down to dinner. Sam was stirring the ice around his water with his butter knife. He seemed preoccupied. We're friends, Alice said again. Just because we haven't sat in the same room together in 15 years doesn't mean we have to tiptoe around like the friggin' Pope is at the table. I didn't drive 10 hours to be bored. I'm allowed to ask a friend a question, and he's allowed to say he doesn't want to answer if he doesn't want to answer. She turned to Sam. It surprises me to see that you're not having a drink. Would you care to say why,
or would you care for me to shut the hell up?
Mikey said, let's take a vote around the table.
Alice said, all right, all right, all right. But it was just an honest question. I don't see what's so wrong about that.
Isa said, do you want to know what my mom used to say about honest questions?
What's that?
They can be like farts. It feels good to let them out, but once you do, sometimes they just make the whole room stink.
Everyone laughed, including Sam.
Sam said, Alice, I don't mind you asking. It's not that I have a problem with alcohol, and yes, I'm always trying to lose a few, but that's not why either.
He paused and pursed his lips for a moment before a noisy sigh shot out of him.
He ran one hand down from his throat to the button stretched tight over his belly and smoothed the napkin over his lap.
Beyond that, he said, I don't want to talk about it any more right now, please and thank you.
He offered a minimal smile.
Alice said, are you pregnant?
Before anyone could respond, she threw her white napkin in the air, a sign of peace, then waved both arms around as though deflecting invisible weapons and cried, I'm kidding! I'm done! I'm done!
Now everyone had a full plate before them, and Alice said, let's do a toast.
Here we all are.
So let's drink to that.
It's really very nice and very cool being together again.
Too nice for this to be entirely depressing, even given the circumstances. So, to being here.
To being here.
Being together.
To being here together.
Being together.
They raised glasses, and as the others began to eat, Sam bowed his head briefly in prayer. When he opened his eyes, seeming restored, he announced that he'd never had lamb before.
Ever? Chris said.
Lynn said, Mikey, you're big into cooking these days. Have you made lamb?
Mikey nodded.
I did a braised shank when I first got my crock pot, he said.
Alice said, the last thing I did in my crock pot was a shoe.
Did you say a shoe?
Chris laughed.
She's not lying, you guys.
Mikey said, why on earth?
Lynn said, did you eat your shoe?
Sam said, Alice, you are so weird.
He had not yet taken a bite of his meal, but he was still staring at the setup before him. He leaned toward Isa and said,
which fork am I supposed to use?
Isa said, beats me. I'm just using the little one because she is.
He nodded toward Lynn.
Lynn said, I think you do salads with the little one, meat with the big one. But I don't know about the beans. We really need Jimmy here to teach us how the rich live.
Also, is there salt in that mason jar?
Weird.
Can you pass me that?
Alice said, correction, it wasn't a shoe. It was a boot.
Sam said, explain.
Alice said, a few months ago, time came to retire the pair of boots I'd had for years. I worked up a big salty beef roast, then took the meat out, stuck my boot in, and slow-cooked it in that fatty broth for 6 hours.
How'd it turn out? Sam said.
Finn loved it, Chris said.
She had already finished her glass of wine and now was reaching to take a sip from Alice's glass.
He ate the whole stinking boot.
Alice gave a proud glance around the table, then took her glass back and set it on the far side of her plate, out of Chris's reach.
Chris said,
Alice loves Finn more than me. She's never once cooked a meal for me in the whole time we've been together. Boo-hoo-hoo.
Mikey tried not to stare. Genuinely, genuinely disturbed by the voice. It felt like a betrayal. Alice swallowed the food in her mouth and said neutrally,
don't take it too hard, hun. I love Finn more than me, too.
Mikey, how's your cat?
Mikey said, happy and handsome.
No more cancer?
No more cancer.
When Friday was 4 years old, a bad cancer had grown in his shoulder, and it cost Mikey 3 paychecks to have it removed, along with Friday's front left paw where the cancer had spread.
Alice said, did you save his paw, the one they removed?
Mikey snorted.
Yes, I put it on a string and use it like a toy for him to chase around. Alice stared at him.
Are you serious?
No! Are you nuts?
Sorry, Alice said.
I didn't realize you had developed such a daring sense of humor. She sipped from her wine.
But you didn't want to wear it around your neck or keep it in your pocket, like a rabbit's foot?
I mean, what is there? A special recycling bin at the vet's office for tumors and paws?
If you care about your pet, you should care what happens to their paw.
Mikey made a face.
Must you have such a strong opinion about everything?
Yes, especially irrelevant things that I know nothing about.
Alice stated this with great bravado, a finger in the air.
Issa laughed very loudly.
You know what? I actually agree.
Alice said, You and I are going to be such good friends.
She poured more wine for herself and sent the bottle around the table. She rose to retrieve another from the cabinet, flinging a triumphant smile back over her shoulder. When she returned, Sam was poking at the medium-rare center of his lamb with his fork and whispered,
Do you think they'd cook this up a little bit for me?
I don't want to offend the cook, but I'm not too big on blood.
Alice sliced off the medium well edges of her cut, and she sent it down the table to Sam.
I'll trade you, she said. Send me your bloody scraps.
Sam said, Do you remember when those neighborhood bullies, Pete and what's his name, smeared raw meat on the front porch of the Gunner house?
Lynn said, That's right, after we stole the chains off their bikes.
Damn, those guys were tough and scary.
One of them had a ponytail, and the other one had a mustache, Sam said.
Alice said, Whatever happened to those guys anyway?
Pete and Jackson, was it?
You know what became of them, Mikey? They stay in the area?
I think they both dropped out of school around their sophomore year, didn't they?
Mikey nodded.
I heard Pete's in the clink.
Stabbed his grandma.
Oh, no, Lynn said. Really?
Mikey nodded.
Something about milk. He was living with her at the time. She got 1% instead of 2, or the other way around.
Sam said, Oh, no.
Jesus, Alice said.
She turned to Mikey.
And you thought I had strong opinions.
Lynn asked Sam about his work.
Sam said, I got Employee of the Month twice now. Company of 300.
It's just because I kiss my bosses behind, but it's all right. They've given me some neat things. Branded fleece, the right size and everything. Had it made special for me.
And when you get Employee of the Month, they give you $50 in your own parking spot. I get to park next to the handicaps.
Mikey said, And all's well with your church? Sam's emails often focused on church activities, hayrides and ice cream socials, a new kid they were sponsoring in Venezuela, food drives for the community, visiting missionaries from the Sudan.
Alice emitted a small groan.
Sam turned to her.
What's that now?
What?
You made a sound.
Did I?
It was involuntary, Alice said. I was just preparing myself to feign interest in church.
Oh, Sam responded, appearing unfazed. He chewed intensely for several seconds, then deposited a small fatty bit of lamb into his napkin.
Well, he said again, wiping his lips, which were shiny with grease, this may actually interest you, believe it or not. Pastor who's been there for 10 years got the boot about a year ago. Messy business.
Alice said, Oh, delicious. What did he do? Seduce everybody's wives?
Sam said, Just a few of them.
Really?
Alice said, her expression wide with delight.
Say more.
Messy business, Sam said again. Went for all the women who were involved in the AA program the church runs. He'd wait for the session to end, then offer private prayer sessions for anyone who wanted them.
Oh, what a dog, Lynn cried.
Alice said,
What a smoothie boy white knight, commie bastard.
Mikey hadn't a clue what, specifically, Alice meant by this. Her insults were often obscure, which conveniently rendered them indisputable. Sam cut into his lamb.
Sure, everyone was pretty darn shocked. The board met,
ousted the guy before the next Sunday.
So what's he doing now? Mikey said.
You guys are gonna love this, Sam said.
He took a sip of water, breathing heavily from the effort of sawing the rest of his meat into bite-sized pieces, then said,
Nowadays, he's writing historical romance novels, all of them about famous ladies' men and their lovers. Gets them self-published. Me and Justine looked him up on Amazon. Titles like Ben Franklin Leaves No Trace.
There was an outbreak of laughter around the table.
Amazing, Alice exclaimed.
She held a small bone at her lips and chewed the last bit of meat from it.
Do you guys remember when we tried to write a book about ourselves when we were little? We all six had a special power.
Lynn said, That's right. We picked our own power. Mine was mind reading.
Alice said, Mine was something stupid and boring like flying.
She paused, then turned to Mikey.
What was yours?
I can't remember, Mikey said.
Lynn shook her head.
Me either.
Sam said, Mikey, I think you wanted to be invisible.
Mikey said, Really? I thought that was Sally's.
No, Sam's right, said Alice. That was yours.
It was quiet for a bit. Mikey ran his fork over his plate. Invisibility. It had maintained its appeal over all these years. How he would enjoy evaporating himself at will. And it seemed oddly noble at this stage of life.
Sam said, Anyhow, that's all the church gossip I've got.
Issa said, Have you always been religious?
Sam shook his head.
It was around the time, well, around the end of high school.
He took a very large bite of lamb, seemingly hopeful that he might evade further questions on this topic. Sam had left Lackawanna to work at a Bible camp in Georgia as soon as he had graduated high school, and it occurred to Mikey now that he never knew exactly when, or why, Sam had become religious. There seemed to be a certain level of discomfort surrounding this subject, some element that Sam never wished to disclose.
Chris turned to Mikey.
What do you do for work?
Maintenance at General Mills, Mikey said.
Fixing up the machinery and stuff?
Mikey nodded.
You get free cereal?
Dozen boxes at the end of the quarter if sales were good. Seemingly restless at not being at the center of the conversation for even a moment, Alice said, I love cereal, but I'm lactose intolerant. Sometimes I get a box and just eat it dry by the handful.
Issa said, You don't like the fake milk? The soy kind?
Alice shook her head.
Can't stand the stuff. It tastes like an unscented candle.
It does, doesn't it? Lynn said. She sipped her water. Alice, are you still doing those events with the women's rights drives?
Alice nodded.
Helped them raise $8,000 last year alone.
Which reminds me, you guys, freaking make sure you're writing your governors, okay? Wankers are always trying to take us back to the 1950s. State of Texas? Some women have to drive 400 miles to terminate a pregnancy.
She looked at Sam.
It's almost that bad in parts of Georgia, too.
Sam cut into his lamb and didn't respond. Alice stared at him, her nostrils flaring.
Do not tell me you're one of them, Sam. Do you know how many women a year die from complications attempting to abort on their own because they're denied adequate care?
Sam blinked slowly and finished chewing his lamb. He said, No, Alice. And I don't particularly care to know that statistic.
Alice dropped her steak knife onto her plate with a noisy clatter. Her eyes were black fire, jaw jutting forward. You're probably one of the ones voting to keep Deal the Heel around, aren't you?
Sam said, Who's that?
Alice threw her hands into the air, face open wide, incredulous. Nathan Deal, the governor of Georgia? Sam, you know, the state where you live?
Mikey said, Sam, you are not obligated to tell her who you vote for.
Sam said, If it makes you feel better, Alice, I don't vote. Period.
Lynn laughed into her fist. Mikey stared at his lamb and tried not to smile.
That's even worse, Alice shrieked. Do you know how many...
Lynn was still laughing as she cut Alice off.
Relax, Al, would you please?
Lynn said. For the record, I agree with you. But can you leave it be? He's allowed to have his opinions.
Alice cracked her neck, then looked around the table.
Oh, what?
She said. We consider women's reproductive rights another unsavory topic for dinner conversation, do we? Am I being tacky? Am I a downgrade from you all's typical Sunday evening company? Is it time for me to take a time out?
Lynn said, I don't think that's necessary. Maybe just a cool down. Your company is, as always, very exhilarating.
Fair, Alice said. She pushed at strands of dark hair that had sprung loose from her braid. But am I exigent? My brother called me that recently. I had to look it up, and when I did, it really hurt my feelings.
Alice released a noisy sigh before anyone could respond, and she turned directly to Sam.
You know I love you, right?
Sam said, We're good, Alice. It was quiet for a bit.
Alice's dark eyes were shining with emotion and several glasses of wine.
I'm serious. You're my friend since we're 6 years old, and I love you even if you don't drink and you don't vote. You know that, right? Hell, I don't exercise and I don't floss. You know what else I don't do? Put money in the Salvation Army bucket. Not even at Christmas time. I'm a monster. I'm the Grinch.
We're good, Alice, Sam said again.
Chapter 18 Alice turned to Lynn.
When'd your finger go missing, by the way?
Let's see, Lynn said. I must have misplaced it about 9, 10 years ago, even after I retraced all my steps.
Issa patted his breast pocket and said, I've got Lynn's finger right here, Alice. Take it with me everywhere, like a rabbit's foot.
Alice roared.
You're gonna give me a hemorrhage! Is that what you get from laughing too hard?
She turned back to Lynn.
You were saying?
Lynn looked around the table.
I didn't tell any of you guys.
Mikey said, I remember you saying you had an injury and that's why you dropped out of school.
Lynn nodded.
Right.
It would have been my second year of school that my teacher started me training for the senior concerto competition. Winning pianist gets a big grant, performance at Carnegie Hall, yada yada. So I was practicing for that, 9 or 10 hours a day, often late into the night, sometimes until dawn.
Lynn paused and took a sip of water. Under the light of the chandelier, her hair glimmered red and orange and gold and yellow, and shot out dramatically from her small, pale face. Her pupils were practically non-existent.
One night in the practice room, Lynn continued, I left for a quick bathroom break. When I came back, I sat down to play. Third movement of the concerto opens with a huge, crashing octave in the left hand.
She demonstrated a long stretch from pinky to thumb with her left hand.
And when I brought my hand down, it met a needle that was stuck between the keys.
A needle was stuck in between the piano keys? Alice cried. Oh, no!
She shuddered dramatically, her tongue sticking out one side of her mouth.
That makes my vagina contract and disappear inside itself.
Sam said, mine too.
Mikey said, someone put the needle there to sabotage you?
Issa said, you can't know how crazy these conservatory kids are unless you've been one.
Sam said, were you a student there too?
Issa nodded. Jazz department.
Lynn and I didn't know each other at the time.
Alice said, did they find out who it was?
I'll kill him. You know it was a guy. A girl would have just started a rumor that you were screwing your teacher. Am I wrong?
Lynn said, this was before they had surveillance cameras on every hall. Could have been anyone. The students there, the competition, it wasn't a friendly place. They never did find out who it was.
So, and your hand?
It wasn't bad at first, Lynn said. It hurt because the needle pierced the skin, but mostly it just freaked me out.
I ran back to my dorm room, locked myself in there, didn't practice for a day or two. Called campus security and my teacher. Tried to get my head on straight. At first, it seemed like my hand was going to heal up fine. But a few days later, it got worse. Red, painful. Turned purple, then almost to black. Numb right at the knuckle. That's when I went to a doctor. Alice said, "Infection?" Mikey said, "Was there something in the needle? Or on it?" Lynn nodded. I bolted from the room that night, and by the time campus security got there to check it out, the needle was gone. "What did the doctor say?" Lynn said, "He did all sorts of tests, trying to figure out the source of the infection. It was clear that it wasn't just a needle. I would have recovered from a pinprick in 2 days. There was something on it. Someone knew what they were doing, but they never found out who or what it was."
"And that's when you had your finger removed?"
Lynn said, "The doctor recommended surgery to remove the finger right away. He said that if he didn't amputate, there was a very high likelihood that the infection would grow worse, spread quickly. My whole body could go into sepsis. I could die."
"So you had it done then?"
"Nope." Lynn shook her head. I walked out of the hospital, went home to my dorm, decided to wait and see what would happen.
Alice stared at her. "At the risk of dying?"
Lynn nodded. "My thinking at the time was that if I lost a finger, I'd no longer be a pianist, at least not a serious one. Death seemed... I know that sounds outrageous, but I didn't feel like I'd have enough to live for."
"Wow," Alice breathed. "It's that important to have all 10 fingers?
"Classical repertoire, yes," Lynn said. "All the stuff that would win me any awards, get me any big jobs."
Alice said, "Damn, that sounds like discrimination. I smell a lawsuit."
Lynn laughed. "My doctor thought I was a complete lunatic. He pled with me, told me it was 50-50 that I would live another month if I didn't take the operation."
"So what happened?"
"In a couple days' time, it was getting worse and fast, spreading. I got a fever."
"And he was able to change your mind then? Convinced you to get the surgery?"
Lynn said, "He didn't change my mind."
"So what did?"
Lynn said, "I guess I realized I didn't want to go just yet." She sipped her water.
Alice said, "And was it worth it?"
"What do you mean?"
"Was life worth living? Worth sticking around for?"
Lynn said, "There were a few years there where I wasn't sure."
Alice said, "There are times I'm not sure myself. I mean, do the pros really outweigh the cons? Life can be such a patronizing fucker."
Sam frowned. "I don't like to hear you talk like that," he said.
"Oh, don't worry," Alice said, waving her hand. "I'm not gonna off myself, especially not right after Sally. I don't want my funeral to be sloppy seconds."
She paused.
"I'm joking, you guys."
Sam said, "I never know when you're serious. It's very annoying." He turned to Lynn. "So when you got the surgery, you were, what, 20? 21? Alone in the city?"
Lynn nodded.
"After the surgery, they got me on a bunch of hydrocodone for the recovery, and it wasn't long at all until I was totally hooked. I'd go to doctors all over the city, get them to prescribe me painkillers."
"Were you working?"
"Office temping. I couldn't hold anything for more than a few weeks. I moved out to Queens when I dropped out of school because I had to leave the dorm and couldn't afford Manhattan anymore. Eventually, well, it didn't make sense to take the subway 45 minutes into Manhattan to try and finagle one more script out of one more doctor when I could buy smack on the block where I lived for a fraction of the cost. Eventually, I was selling, too, because I couldn't hold down a job and had no other way to get my fix and scrape enough together for rent."
"Geez," Mikey said softly.
"I had no idea things were so bad, Lynn."
"But you still managed to keep in touch with us," Alice said. "That's something."
Lynn offered a weary, desiccated little smile.
I didn't have a computer, but I'd go to the public library, an hour-long walk from my apartment. That's where I'd go to check my email, and managing to crank out a coherent response to you guys. Well, it was all a rather painful and extravagant charade.
So when did the two of you meet? Sam nodded in Issa's direction.
We met in AA in Queens, Issa said. I had my own set of problems. Like Lynn, I made it into the conservatory on full scholarship and couldn't relate to the classmates, most of them rich kids from private schools. I didn't fit. I graduated, but barely, drinking a fifth of rum a day. Eventually moved out to Queens and got a job doing music at a Pentecostal church. Started AA. My second meeting, this one shows up, and I'm like, I know you, but I don't know why. We put it together then. We would have crossed paths at the conservatory 100 times, just hadn't properly met. Then I found out she was that girl with the finger. Everyone at school had heard the story. We were all examining pianos top to bottom every time we sat down at a practice room, looking for needles and broken glass and razor blades. Even still, I sort of thought it was urban legend. Didn't know it had actually happened. And she shows me her hand. I tried to get her to come out for coffee with me. Took a good little while to convince her. Lynn said, "They tell you not to start dating someone you meet at AA, and I was trying to follow all the rules." Alice said, "So you guys have been together now, what, 8 years? Issa said, "Don't even bother saying it, Alice. It's no use. I've been trying to get Lynn to marry me since our first date." Lynn protested. "Not true." "It absolutely is true," Issa said to the others. Lynn held up her left hand, cheerily wiggling the fingers around the missing one. "Where would you propose putting a ring, anyway?" Issa gently pushed a few red curls back from Lynn's face and leaned over to kiss her cheek. He said, "That's her favorite excuse." Alice turned to Lynn.
"So what's the problem? What are you scared of? What's the worst thing that could happen? You get divorced?"
She paused to drink more wine.
"Speaking from experience, I can assure you that getting divorced hurts about as much as a bee sting."
Lynn laughed. Sam said, "You guys run the local AA in Jim Thorpe, right?" Lynn nodded. "Even in a small town, last place you'd expect, you've got loads of people in need of help." She was quiet for a bit. Then she said, "You guys wouldn't know this, but I was already using in high school. Before, even, 12 or 13.
"We were all drinking by then," Alice pointed out.
"Sure," Lynn said, "but it was different for me. I wanted it more than you guys. I could just tell it was different for me. The pathology. It wasn't long till I needed it and started looking for harder stuff, too."
"Were you using pills when we were in school?" Alice said.
Lynn nodded. "I was buying from those older guys on the street. You know, the nutter who apparently stabbed his grandma and the other one. They were actually in with some really bad news guys. Townies, junkies, dropouts. They always had stuff on them. I started buying whatever they had, as much as I could afford."
"I had no clue," Mikey said.
"I know," Lynn said. She paused to eat a bite of lamb. Then she said, "Sally knew." Sam's head jerked upright.
"Sally knew?"
Lynn said, "I wasn't planning on bringing this up, you guys. I know it's already a sad occasion, but it's been on my mind."
Lynn paused and ran her napkin over her lips. She sighed and pushed red curls back behind her ears. The corners of her mouth drooped.
"I think it was my fault, you guys."
Sam said, "What was your fault?"
"Sally leaving us."
Alice said, "What do you mean?"
Lynn said, "I never wanted to tell you guys this because I felt so ghastly about the whole thing."
"What happened?" Sam said.
"A few weeks before Sally left us, she caught me."
"Using something?"
"Buying something. Outside the 7-Eleven.
Sally walked out and saw me mid-handover. It had to be obvious. She walked on by in that moment, but brought it up with me later that night. She was worried. She knew I wasn't up to any good, and she knew I was lying when I said it was just cigarettes. Being caught in a lie made me so defensive, scared of getting found out, the rest of you turning on me if you knew. I felt cornered. It made me mean. Lynn shook her head. Her posture had gone so low, she sagged in her chair like damp laundry. I can't believe I brought her mom into it. Sam said, "What about her mom?"
"Did you say something about her mom?" Alice asked.
Lynn nodded. "Something like, you act so naive, but your own mother's an alcoholic, you know. You've lived with one your whole life, so don't act like I'm some degenerate, like I'm some kind of shock to you." Lynn fanned briskly at her deeply flushed face with all her fingers, as though to cool it. When she spoke again, her voice was thin and watery. "And then I made her promise to keep all of this secret from the rest of you guys. Made her swear. I was mean. Seriously nasty to her. She was scared."
Alice said, "You can't beat yourself up like this, Lynn. We were kids, for crying out loud."
Sam nodded. "That is true."
Alice added, "And Corinne was messed up. Jesus. Not trying to pile on, but did you guys see her today? That poor woman looks like something the cat threw up."
Mikey said, "Don't be mean."
"I know," Alice said, hand in the air, conceding to this. She turned to Lynn. "You didn't say anything about Sally's mom that wasn't true. That's all I meant to say."
Lynn said, "Sally never, ever spoke ill of her mother, did she? Very protective of her." Sam said, "She never said much about her, period." Mikey could recall a single occasion when Sally had spoken somewhat disparagingly of her mother, but it was such a mild, fleeting observation that he wasn't even sure it could count as speaking ill. Sally was 11 or 12 at the time, and Mikey was helping her memorize a vocabulary list on the bus on the way to school. Sally said the word delusional, spelled it, and offered the definition. She stared out the window in silence for a moment. Then she said,
"I think my mom does this sometimes."
"Does what?" Mikey had said.
"When she tells stories about other people, like when my Aunt Rhonda comes to visit, or Grammy, or when we visit them, or when my mom's boyfriends are over. Anyhow, whenever my mom remembers things, she always remembers it wrong. Like that people were mean to her, when they were actually nice."
Sally thought on this for a moment, then added,
"Or that people were nice to her when actually they were mean."
Sally fell silent again, and these would be the last words Mikey ever heard her speak of her mother. Alice turned back to Lynn.
"Did you and Sally make amends before she cut us all off?"
Lynn nodded.
"I apologized. Things still felt a little chilly between us, but I got the impression it was going to be okay. But then it wasn't even a full month after that happened that she cut off all of us. I couldn't help feeling that was why."
Alice said, "Lynn, you're a sweet sap." Lynn said, "It's one of those memories that still lives hot in me. Do you know what I mean? Still comes at nighttime in pieces and waves." She looked around to meet the eyes of the others.
"The other thing I've wondered, do you guys think there's any chance Sally started using something? I hadn't thought about it all that much, but then with the suicide, and with Corinne, obviously it would run in the family. Anyway, there were times when I was really in the thick of it. My own addiction, I mean. I was right at the edge."
Lynn's voice had grown far away and indistinct, and Mikey thought of the scar he had seen on her forearm earlier that afternoon.
Alice said, "What do you mean?"
"Self-obliteration," Lynn said.
"If I'd had the wherewithal to get myself to the edge of a bridge, I probably would have jumped off it. I just wonder about Sally's state of mind." What took her there?
Sam turned to Mikey. Did Sally look healthy more recently when you saw her out?
Mikey said, I never got very close, but I wouldn't say she looked unhealthy.